Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf.
And it's just a crazy, crazy new year. It's the first show of the new year. And boy, oh boy, I've never seen so many people with so many problem dogs and problem marriages and problem children. I think we all have to just get back to what the basics are and really just start at square one. So one of the things that everybody's been kind of calling me about, and I've been super busy again, is a lot of people getting first-time dogs. So, you know, people get a puppy, and everybody wants a puppy because, you know, let's face it, puppies are cute, right? So are newborns. But, you know, they're a lot more work. And if you're a first-time dog owner, you know, that's a perfect opportunity for you to get a dog who's maybe 4 or 5 years old. I mean, obviously, you know, you have fewer years with them, but get a dog who you're already not starting out, that you've got to housebreak it, you got to get it through the puppy phases, you got to get it through the chewing phases, you've got to get it through the nipping your kids phases and stealing things and destroying your molding phase. Why don't you talk to your friends, you know, talk to people who say, hey, I want to go buy some designer dog, because what happens is, you get problems very often. Not all of them are problems, but awfully high percentage have behavioral issues or health issues and other things. Either go to an AKC show breeder, and what's great about AKC show breeder, not just an AKC breeder, but an AKC breeder who shows their dogs, a little known secret that a lot of the people who breed these really awesome dogs, like what I do breeding my Grand Champion Rudies and Ridgebacks, I keep all my dogs, and once I have them and I keep them as a puppy, I keep them unless somebody steals it away as a service dog for me. Pretty much I keep them. But what a lot of really good breeders do, if let's say they have a litter of, let's say Havanese. They have a litter of Havanese, and they're all beautiful. So the breeder wants to maybe go for a judging license, or the breeder just wants to go for ranking. So they raise them. They basically train them. They give them the best of everything. And let's say the dog finishes its championship at a year, year and a half, 2 years old. A lot of these breeders will allow you to buy one of their amazing, super nice show dogs. The dog is already trained. The dog is already great with people because it's been handled. It's been taught. They're great on a leash. They're not destructive. They're phenomenal dogs, and you're starting out with something that's young, but that's already trained. If you had to put the training in, and I tell people, I mean, I charge $350 an hour when I'm working with rescues, or I do, if it's 501c3, I do it for free. But when I'm working with, you know, with people in general, you know, I do give a discount, but still, even let's call it $100 an hour that you're going to pay for even your local yokel obedience trainer who, you know, like an 18-year-old kid or something who isn't super knowledgeable, you're still going to be paying $100 an hour. And if you're putting, you know, 50, 100 hours at least of training in, you can see very quickly that's going to add up. So consider contacting that whatever breed you're looking at, and there's some really cool low-shedding breeds, Portuguese water dogs, poodles, different sizes of poodles, of course, Havanese, Maltese, Yorkies. There's a lot of dogs like that, and the easy way to know which of the dogs have, like, the hair, although it's kind of a misnomer, but the hair versus the fur. Think about the vast majority of them. If the hair continues to grow, like our hair grows, that's usually not as shedding as the fur that gets to a certain length and then pops out. Think about the difference between your eyelashes, which get to a certain length and kind of fall out, and they get in your eyeball, okay? And think about your hair on your head, where you have to get a cut. You don't have to cut your eyelashes unless you're very blessed. But you do have to cut your hair. So it's kind of that concept. So think about and even go on the AKC website and look at some of the breeds. I mean, heck, there's even a Mexican hairless dog, right? A Jolo, they call it. And I just found out that my little Lexi, who is, I thought she was at least part Ridgeback, she came up as Beagle, Harrier, Foxhound, boxer, like 25% boxer, and this dog is 20 pounds. A little bit of Chihuahua, Dalmatian, and all kinds of crazy stuff in this dog. Well, she said more than all my Ridgebacks combined. I have, let's say, a dozen Ridgebacks here and one Lexi, and that little dog sheds more than anything, and she's part Mexican hairless. I think she's got poodle in her. So go to a breeder, a show dog breeder, not a mixed breed dog breeder who's charging you $5,000 for a mutt and laughing at you on your way down out of their house or out of their farm or barnyard. But go there and or make some phone calls and say, hey, I'm looking for a dog who maybe finished its championship and who you'd like to find a great home for. So those are really good dogs, or dogs at a shelter. Rescues are a phenomenal way for you to find good dogs that are a known quantity. Now, not all rescues are good, but, you know, let's say that a lot of them are. Make a phone call. Make sure the rescue responds back to you. They seem nice. They're volunteers, or their staff is courteous. Because if you have a problem, you want to make sure that they're going to be very helpful and very cooperative in helping you in case you do have a problem with the dog. The other nice thing about going to a rescue is almost all the time, and again, I wouldn't necessarily knock a rescue out because it does this, but a lot of the rescues get a dog in the South, they start advertising it, they take pictures when it's down South, they bring it up, and you literally pick it up off of a truck in the Walmart parking lot. I don't like that concept. I've seen a lot of dogs that they're terrified and, you know, they're coming up. They don't know the rescuers. They don't know you. And then you wind up with, you know, a big problem. So what I'm kind of hoping you guys can do is kind of sort through, sift through, and find a rescue that you like and stick with that rescue, even if you have to wait a little bit. Let them know how many kids you have, how old your kids are, what you're looking for, what your lifestyle is. Are you active or are you a couch potato? You take a breed that you look at, like, let's say, a beagle, and you say, oh, well, you know, beagles are great. I love beagles, one of my favorite breeds. But if you have a lot of activity and you have a lot of little critters, there's a good chance that your beagle is going to go outside and woo, 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 and it's going to be howling and baying. So, you know, look at the breed that's going to fit you and stop falling in love with your eyes and start falling in love with your brain, which means it's like my husband always used to say, men fall in love with their eyes and women fall in love with their ears. And I'd say, what the heck does that mean? He said, well, men fall in love because of what they see. They see a beautiful woman. They see something beautiful, that's what they want. They see it. Women, if a man says, oh, I love you, but he's cheating, she'll still stay. Not all of us, but enough of us will do that. And then it ends up that you're falling in love with what you hear, what somebody tells you. The thing to do is fall in love with your head. Is this a good person? Is this a good dog? Is this going to be great in a year or in 5 years? Is this going to be a problem? How about the lifestyle? Do you like to travel and I don't? Well, if you like to travel a lot, maybe you can foster a dog. That's another option. I have several people where I live in this private gated community that are lovely people. And they said, you know, we're home during COVID. We'd love to have a dog. But when COVID ends, we might have a different lifestyle. So we don't really want to just get a dog. So what do you suggest? Well, guess what? You can foster. So a lot of people out there, you probably have never even thought of it, but a good rescue will be happy to teach you the basics. They'll go over things with you, and it's a great way. First of all, you could become a foster failure, which means you foster the dog, and then you find out, like, oh, I love this dog. I don't want it to go, and then you can adopt it, kind of like a foster child that you fall in love with, and you adopt the child, and it becomes yours forever, which is a wonderful thing. So maybe consider contacting a rescue or your local shelter. Some of the shelters will offer that program. Unfortunately, a lot of them don't or can't just because liability reasons, but a good rescue near you, reach out to people. Rescues are dying for good fosters. So you have that opportunity to see how the dog is, to have the people from the rescue, and hopefully they're, you know, they know what they're talking about, and a lot of them do, and again, some don't, some do, you've got to check. But when you find a rescue and they're kind and they're nice and they're helpful and they're, you know, returning your phone call and they're not upset with you for asking a million questions, ask them, is it possible for us to foster a dog for you guys? I know somebody, a lady named Leanne and her husband Stephen, who have fostered about 20 dogs over the last 5 years. They've fostered some for us, for our organization, and they've fostered some privately for other rescues. And it's a great thing to be able to do that, especially if somebody's looking at potentially getting a dog for an elderly parent. Why do people have to go out and buy an 8-week-old lab poodle, you know, golden, you know, chihuahua mix for $5,000 that's going to be hyper and run all over, and they give it to their 87-year-old mother who lives alone and is on a walker? You know, that's not a swift idea. That's where you find that dog who's 6 or 7, 8 years old and is a, you know, small to mid-sized breed that may live to be 14 or 15. And this way, the dog isn't going to, you know, you're not getting a Yorkie puppy that's going to live 15 years and you've got an 87-year-old woman. I mean, God bless her, she lives to 102 and still living at home. But the chances are that's probably not going to happen. So consider a dog who's got a little bit of age on him. If you're somebody who's a real motherly caretaker kind of person, like I love these kind of dogs, I love to get the dogs who, like I rescued 2 10-and-a-half-year-old Ridgebacks and a 12-year-old Ridgeback. Everybody thought I was out of my mind. They said, you're going to lose 3 dogs in like 6 months. The 12-year-old lived to 16, which was another 4 years. That's a long time. The 2 10-and-a-half, one lived to 15, the other one lived to 16. So I had these dogs a pretty darn long time. So think about that if you, you know, might want something and you love being a caretaker and, you know, snuggling and cuddling and doing some special things and special care, it's so rewarding when you see these dogs. Yes, it's so sad. It's so sad. But it's also, it's really a blessing. It's really a good deed for you to do, kind of like we would want somebody to take care of us when we're older. You know, these dogs a lot of times are in families where, you know, somebody's allergic and they give the dog up. Somebody loses their home. They can't find anybody and they give the dog up. Sometimes the elderly person who had them for the last 8 or 9 or 10 years passes away or goes into a nursing home or an assisted care. And, you know, now they can't take the dog with them. All kinds of things happen. So you can really do wonderful things and really do something that's going to make you feel good. And teach your kids, you know, teach your kids, hey, when the going gets tough, you know, we're going to help this old dog. He's 11 years old and, you know, he can't see real well, but we're going to help him. Because you're teaching children to be kind. You're teaching them also to take care of you someday when you get old and you need extra special care. So, you know, the people who, you know, you get a puppy and it's 6 months old and you can't take it anymore and you get rid of it. Just remember, your children are watching. When you do that a couple of times, I saw a family did it 3 times in a row and they kept blaming, we can't get a good dog. We can't get a good dog. Like, God forbid they would admit that, you know, maybe they're just messing all their dogs up. But they taught their children, if it's too much work, you get rid of it. And you may be in a nursing home someday. I'll leave that one at that. Now, let's get back on to caring for a puppy, caring for a new dog. First thing is, and I know this is completely common sense, but as we all know, common sense is not always very common. The first thing is, when you get a dog or a puppy or whatever, you don't know, first of all, if the dog is going to nip, bite, it's afraid, it's got a disease, it's got coccidia, giardia, worms, fleas, ticks, some kind of other parasite, mange. Don't teach your kids and you as well to stick your face into the dog's face and to get too close too quickly. It's fine to be snuggly and it's fine for all that, but don't you go to the dog. Let the dog get comfortable with you first. If you were at, let's say, you know, you're at, let's say, a christening or a bar mitzvah, and you're, you know, let's say 12, 13 years old, and some lady walks up to you, some old lady, and grabs you by the cheek and starts pinching you, and, oh, Johnny, you're so cute, Johnny. And now you all of a sudden are like, lady, get off of me. I don't know who you are. That's Great Aunt Sally. Great Aunt Sally's been sending you a birthday present every year since the day you were born. You just never met her because she lives in the retirement community in Florida. So you don't know who she is, but she knows who you are. Kind of that same thing. You know who the dog is. You've seen the picture. You know everything about the dog. You want the dog. You're excited. The dog looks at you as, whoa, back off, 6 feet, please. It's COVID time. And if the dog doesn't do that and it comes up and it's too excited, you may get scratched or cut or bitten, even if the dog doesn't mean it. Give the dog space. Give the dog time. Let the dog take time to learn who you are, and let the dog start feeling comfortable in the surroundings before you start sticking your face into it and inviting all your neighbors and their toddlers over and go, oh, look at the dog. Isn't it cute? And then the dog is terrified because toddlers are all over, and you blame the dog when it nips a kid. You've got to use common sense. So how do you then introduce a dog to your home? First thing is, if the dog is leash trained, so this wouldn't be appropriate for a puppy under probably 16 weeks, but if the dog is leash trained, it has all its shots, and it's up to date on all, the best thing to do is actually to take the dog, bring the dog with you on the leash, and walk him a short walk around the neighborhood. Let him see where he is before he's going into a confined area like a home or a room, especially if you have a really small house or small apartment. The dog is used to being confined when it's not necessarily a positive experience. He just came off a transport, right? He was just in a kennel, or he was just in a crate for how many months or God forbid, years. Let the dog be outside. Let him decompress. It gives you time to see if he's good with other dogs on the leash, if he is skittish, if he's too bold. So take him out there for, it can be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever. See if you can't walk him around. Then you're going to take him and just bring him into your front yard and your backyard. So now you're walking him around the front yard, the perimeter of the yard, so he can smell things. Let him potty if he's got to go, and then don't let him mark everything, but walk around a couple times in your front yard, walk around a couple times in your backyard if you can. Then when you're done doing that, then bring him in, open the door wide, you go through the door first, let the dog follow you, tell him, okay, so he knows that he can walk through and follow you. Keep him on the leash, walk him around your first floor, walk him around your basement. Walk him around the second floor in every room, all the way around the perimeter of each room. Why are we doing that? Let him learn the plan. Let him learn where things are. Let him learn that, oh, okay, we go up, we go down. A lot of times you're going to find dogs don't know how to go up and down stairs, or they're skittish when they're going through a narrow passage because they're used to getting on and off now the transport and banging and clanging. When you put him in a crate, don't force him into the crate, because remember, he might not have the best experience being in a crate. So start him out slowly. And actually, honestly, the best thing to do, get a copy of my book. It's less than $10, priced right so everybody can afford it, called Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101 by Janice Wolf. And if you get the book and read it, you know, it'll probably take you 2 hours. Like, you probably read it twice in that. I wrote it not to be an SAT prep course, like Jerry, my editor, told me when I gave her the first copy, first chapter. And she said, Janice, this is not a college prep course. You're not teaching your PhD students. You need to simplify it. And I did. And I think I did a pretty good job on making it simple. And not that it's simple because people wouldn't understand it, but it's uncomplicated. Really, it's such an easy thing that you need to do. Teach the dog that you're the parent. You're not the dominate the dog. You're not the beat the dog, throw things at the dog, scare the dog, squirt him in the face, shock collar, prong collar, choker chain. You're not doing that. You're going to teach him the same way you would teach your child. And if he doesn't get it the first time, then you teach him again. And you might have to teach him the same thing 5 times, 10 times, 20 times. But, you know, as far as I remember, most of the kids in my class didn't all get straight A's in every single class that they took or on every single test. But you still have to learn the material, so it takes you a little longer. And you study a little harder on that. And the things that are easy, and the things that take a little more time, they take a little more time. But the key is better and better every day. My uncle used to say that. Better and better every day. Just look for a little bit of improvement every day, and as long as it's trending up, you're going to be okay. So now you've gone around the neighborhood, gone around your yard, you've gone around the backyard, you've gone into the house, and you're walking all around the house. You can then drop the leash and let the dog walk around a little bit on his own. If you have kids, the best thing to do is bring the kids with you. Let them walk the dog. Make sure they're holding the leash, they're not pulling and yanking, and that the dog is behind or beside. But remember, to a dog or to a horse, whoever's holding the end of the reins or the leash is the one in charge. So if the dog is ahead of you, then the dog is leading you. The dog becomes the parent and guardian, the provider and protector. If, however, the dog is beside you or behind you, like think about Canadian geese, which are actually Canada geese named after Lewis Canada, right? Canadian geese, there's always that one leader, right? It's maybe a parent, but it's the one who's there first. So whoever that is obviously who's in charge of the whole crew, right? Everybody's following that one. What happens if that first lead goose falls out of the sky or gets tired? Either he falls out of the sky and they all dive bomb with him, but we know that's not what happens. What happens? Well, of course we know. Everybody else follows. Somebody else takes over. Number two or three or somebody goes in front and says, hey, I'll take over now. So just remember, if you are not that lead goose, then the dog becomes the lead goose, and now the dog is in charge. He goes through doors first. He eats before you do. You're not doing all the things I teach in the book with hunt, wait, eat, which you'll understand if you read the book. He becomes in charge. Well, if he's the best dog in the world, but he really doesn't want to do that job, but he's stuck doing that job because you're not doing that job. And that's the point. You have to do the job, and you have to teach him and show him, not hurting him, but physically showing him. For instance, today I was talking to a lovely lady, and she's probably listening right now, and she has a little adorable Maltese who she loves desperately, but the dog bites her and her husband, doesn't bite anybody else. When I was talking to her, I could barely hear her today. The dog's name is Cookie, and she could barely hear me, and I could barely hear her because Cookie was just barking like a lunatic. And there was somebody walking on the street, or the UPS man, or whatever it happens to be that Cookie didn't really, you know, want to to have that person in the neighborhood. So I told her what to do. I told her to walk towards the window and go in front of Cookie, look out as if she were looking to see who's there, and then to walk away. And then she said, oh, well, now she went to the other window. Go to that window. Do the same thing. And she went back to the first window. And after a couple of times, the dog stopped barking. And I said, now walk away. She walked, the lady walked away, and the dog followed her and stopped barking. And that was it. Things like that, that you just don't know. I know what to tell you. I know how to teach you. That's what we want to do. We're starting this new year with a lesson every day, and questions and question and answer and 100% honesty. Let's go. This is going to be a different year, even though we're going to have COVID for a few more years, I'm sure. Unfortunately, if you've got a dog or you're getting a dog, let's start you off on the right foot. Let's start off the best way possible with teaching your dog, not training, teaching your dog what you expect, not getting angry at your dog because you're not a good teacher. Because if you were teaching the dog and you're training, let's say you're training the dog and you got them to sit perfectly on command for a cookie, and somebody walks into your house and you say sit, the dog sits and then jumps up and bites the person, and you get mad at the dog. He did sit. You taught him to sit. He was sitting. Teach him. I go up to the new people first because I've got to do the providing and protecting. I have to check that person out. You don't need to be there. I need to be near the window. I need to make sure that it's safe for you, not the other way around. I have to make sure that whatever it is, I'm there for you. I'm helping you. I'm keeping you safe. And if I keep you safe, then you will follow me forever. And that's what you need to understand. Dogs are just waiting for us to teach them what we expect of them. But we don't do that. And listen, obedience is fun. I have a couple of friends, Ryan and Brittany, and there's a lot of people that I'm friends with who are obedience trainers. And they send their behavioral issues to me, and I send obedience people to them. I don't enjoy doing the same thing over and over again. It's just not my thing. I like, give me the dog who's trying to bite somebody. Give me the dog who's got an extensive bite history, the one who's fearful, fear aggressive, the one who's been running around on an island for 4 years and nobody can catch. Give me that dog because that's what I enjoy. I like fixing the difficult ones. But there are plenty of really good obedience trainers out there, and you just have to find them. Find one that if you ask them and you say, what happens when there's a dog who's aggressive or that you don't feel you can help? And if they say to you, I've never had one like that, run. Go find somebody else. You want somebody who says, well, if it's aggression and it's anything significant, that's not what I do. I would refer to a behaviorist. There you go. Make sure that the word behaviorist, when people throw that around, make sure it's actually somebody who is a behaviorist. The difference between a behaviorist and a trainer is training a dog for a reward. So if you're using a clicker, you're using a cookie, you're using food reward, whatever. It's kind of, I call it the quid pro quo or the, honey boo boo school of obedience training. It's you're giving the dog something, if you would, bribing him to do a body position. So if you tell the dog to sit and he does it without the cookie, then that has become a bit of a behavior because the dog understands the concept. But really what it is when the dog sits on his own because he's waiting to see what you want and he just sits there because he's chilling out. That's how we train our service dogs as well. We don't train them. We teach them. And there are some very ignorant people out there who don't understand how that works. The rest of the world, 99% of the world, says, wow, that's incredible. I've never seen service dogs able to do things and think independently. Well, if you train them with food and cookies and quid pro quo, you're going to end up with them doing things only when they are instructed to do so and only when there's something in it for them versus a dog or a child, right? You don't train your children to say please and thank you. You teach them. And what happens if somebody gives them something and they don't say thank you? Well, maybe the person doesn't give it again. And then you use that as a teaching moment and say, remember when so-and-so gave you that really pretty toy and you wouldn't say thank you? Well, your birthday came and went and she didn't buy you something this year. Learn from it. There's always lessons to be learned in life. And the important part is that not only are we learning from things, but we're trying to be better the next day. So what we're going to do in a moment, we're going to take a break, and we're going to return with the second segment of our show, which we've been doing since, oh, my Lord, 2008, I think, between the TV and radio, called From Shelter Dog to Service Dog. So we will be right back in a moment. Stay tuned. And welcome to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Well, we were having a little bit of a spirited discussion in the first half of the show for the love of dogs. So today we're going to start out with shelter dogs. We're going to talk about the best dogs that really are for your family and basically talking very candidly about how you can go about finding a good dog at a shelter or rescue. The biggest question is really not what color, what size, what shape, but really what is your, basically your family structure, your dynamic. Are you going to be running out to sporting events? Are you going to be taking the dog with you? Or are you going to be leaving the dog home? If you're a jogger, if you're very active, or if you have kids who are active and are going to want to take the dog out for a bike ride, or maybe they just want to go out for a long walk, they enjoy just hanging out in the yard, start thinking about what your family is and put together on a list. It's great to make a list and let everybody make a different list. So if you have a 16-year-old son and a 12-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old daughter, you might want to really check with each one of them what they're looking for. Because even though the 12-year-old or 13-year-old is going to say, I want to go out, we know what girls start doing when they're teenagers, right, young teenagers. They get a boyfriend or they get friends and they're going shopping and they're doing what they do. Your 16-year-old son, he might be the one who's, you know, hey, I'm going out. I want to be a volunteer. I want to volunteer at the firehouse. He might be going out driving. He's getting his license. He might have a girlfriend, a boyfriend, you know, somebody who's special to him, and he wants to go out with that person. You got to know what your kids, what your wife, husband, significant other, or family structure and family group is ready for. So I tell everybody when they come to me, and I've got a bunch of people right now, I've got probably 6 or 7 people. The one guy, he's a police officer. He works a lot of long shifts. His wife is on board. She definitely does want a dog, but she's not as much of a dog person as he is. They have 2 children. One, you know, is very, very, like, lovely. They're both really nice kids, but one's a little quieter. The other one is a little bit more amped up and spunky. And, you know, I told them, you got to put together a list. So if you start out and you say, well, my wife works part-time, or my wife or my husband or my kids, whatever, start writing lists up so you know what each person is willing to commit. And tell each of the kids, tell the family, listen, we're getting a dog, and usually it's mom who gets stuck taking care of the dog because mom's a lot of times home, although you never know these days, but typically. So the mom is home, and she's going to bear the brunt of it. Now, if she's got 3 children under 8, she may not have time for taking care of a dog as well as taking care of 3 little kids. So that's the kind of thing where I was saying earlier in the for the love of dog portion, that might be a good opportunity for you to get a dog from an AKC show breeder of merit who maybe wants to give, you know, a nice dog up because it's got a championship and they look for really good homes, because then you're not worrying about housebreaking. You're not worrying about the crazy things like chewing and running away and going in the other room and eating your dining room table or chewing on the moldings or, you know, urinating and defecating on your oriental rugs. So, you know, you really just have to look at maybe that is a good opportunity to have either a dog from a breeder, a show breeder that breeds purebred dogs that will stand behind the dogs, or going to a rescue. To me, you either go to an AKC show breeder, or if it's a rare breed, you know, UKC, there are other registries that deal with legitimate, you know, breeds that just don't have enough hold yet or enough individuals in the U.S. where the AKC will even accept them. But those are kind of good places to go. But then look at rescue dogs, because you can contact a rescue. And again, it's like getting a good AKC show breeder. I have people who have been on my list for almost 3 years now. They are still waiting for my Rhodesian Ridgeback. I've given them 3 of my friends who I absolutely know do great jobs with their dogs. They're waiting for my dogs. So my dogs, I don't give out when they're little puppies. You don't get my dog at 8 weeks old. You get them about 14 weeks old, because by 12 to 14 weeks, there's not too much you can do to ruin the dog. I put a ton of training in. And they're super easy. They're generally pretty darn close to 100% housebroken at 14 weeks. They don't do obedience, but they don't jump, they don't bite, they don't, you know, do all the puppy things, they're not tearing around the house, they've already learned manners. Part of that is from staying home with their mother and my pack, but part of it is I put a lot of training in. So if you say, oh, I want a such and such a dog, choose your breeder and wait for that breeder to have something. Don't just say, oh, look, I went to the pet store. Because the pet store is not going to be something that's really going to give you anything good. Most breed clubs, if you sell a dog, a puppy, to a pet store, they will kick you out. Like, you cannot belong to most breed clubs, parent breed clubs, like, let's say, German Shepherd or Rhodesian Ridgeback or Poodle or whatever, because if you sell your dogs to a pet store, you really don't care about your dogs, honestly. You're doing it for money. There's no way a good breeder is ever going to let anybody be a middleman for their quality dog. They put their, and I know, I do it too, put your heart and soul into it. It's easier to adopt a child than it is to get a dog from a really good show breeder. So it's important. But the same thing with rescues and shelters. Let the people know. A great thing is, and it's hard to do now, but there are still places you can go and volunteer. Go ask them, can we walk some of the dogs? Walk a bunch of dogs. Go out there. If your kids are old enough, let them come with you. Start seeing, wow, there's this one. And look, I know it's a pit mix. I really didn't want a pit bull because, you know, they kill children in their sleep. I mean, yes, there's definitely some very bad ones, but most of them are really awesome dogs. So let's just say there was a dog that you never would have considered, but you get to walk on them. You get to learn. You go, oh, my gosh, this dog is so sweet. Now you talk to the rescue or you talk to the shelter if you're fostering or you're volunteering, because now you get to know the dog a little bit. Talk to the people who've been there. There's usually one person who, even if they're not a behaviorist, there's usually somebody who kind of takes care of the difficult ones. That's the person you want to seek out. If they call themselves a trainer or a behaviorist or just a volunteer, you're going to know, because that person is going to be the one when they say, oh, yes, yeah, so-and-so, he's the kind of hard to deal with, ask Joe. And then Joe is going to be the one you want to go to. Tell Joe, hey, Joe, I've got 3 little kids under 8. We're really looking for a dog. What do we have here, or what do you know about the dogs that are here? Are there any that you think might be a good fit? Talk to these people because they know the dogs. And you may be able to, if you're a volunteer, take the dog. Some of the rescues and shelters will allow you to do a foster. So you can take the dog home for a couple of days, a week, whatever. And then you can see how the dog interacts with your family. So you're not getting a puppy or just something off of a transport that you don't have a clue about what it's, you know, what it is, how it's going to act, or if it's healthy or whatever. Find a shelter or rescue or AKC show breeder who is willing to work with you and who you say, I went to visit. The dogs are amazing. I want one of your dogs. So let's say you're at a shelter and you're volunteering and you're walking the dog and you find one and you say, well, it's a little bigger than I thought. All right. Does it really matter if the dog is 20 pounds or 30 pounds? I mean, honestly, does it really matter? If you have children and they're 5 feet tall or they're 6'5", do you love them less? I mean, they can't control that. Again, don't fall in love with your eyes or your ears. Fall in love with your brain. Fall in love with the dog who is waiting for you, who may be a different color, different size, different shape, different breed, different combination of breeds. Maybe it sheds. Maybe you don't have allergies. You know what? I have my little robot vacuums running on each floor of my house right now. My dogs don't shed a lot, but if they did, it wouldn't matter. My little robot vacuum is going to take care of it. So, you know, saying that you don't want to clean up dog hair, I get it. Maybe not letting that dog in your bed. Like if I had German Shepherds, I assure you, or Huskies, they would not be in my bed. I love having dogs in my bed. It's what I do. So all my dogs have short hair and they really don't shed a lot. But, you know, you can also put a comforter or a little blanket on top and let the dog lay on that and then just shake it outside. I mean, We look for excuses. We look for problems. Look for solutions. You want that dog that when you come home, that dog wants you, has been waiting all day for you, hasn't been chewing your house all day waiting for you, hasn't been drooling and ripping up its crate or your curtains or your dining room table all day. But that dog who's just giving you that unconditional love, shelters are full of amazing, amazing dogs. About 1 in 100 dogs in a shelter is capable of being a service dog. It is not 1 in 10. It is not 1 in 20. It is about 1 in 100. We can go to 2 or 3 shelters with 30 or 40 dogs. We will get one. But that dog will be amazing. And dogs end up there for different reasons. And, you know, the greatest thing is, and I tell people all the time, you know, you go and we had somebody who just had 2 dogs here. There were, I think, they're supposed to be miniature lab poodle mixes, okay? One of them looks literally, I mean, its hair all fell out. It's got immune issues. It's got behavioral issues. It's, I guess, kind of cute, smart, but it's just not a healthy dog. They've had a lot of little issues with it. And it had all its hair came out, like literally all its hair came out. The sibling, who is supposedly a brother, same litter, he looks like kind of what you would think of a little smaller lab poodle, although he looks like, I don't know what he looks like, but he's got a lot of hair. He's very sweet. He's dumb as a stump, but really sweet dog, really sweet. And, you know, you look at that and you say, well, why do you have such diversity when it's in the same litter? It's because they're not a breed. They're mixed breeds. So it's like if you have, you know, let's say a pony and a horse, and pony is just the size. So let's say you have a small pony and a large horse. You could have a small pony. You could have a large horse. Or you could have anything in between. And that's the problem. You can't tell with these designer dogs because they're not a thing, right? They're not, like, you can have one and it's the same parents and one of them is 10 pounds and one is 25 pounds. So going to a shelter, awesome thing, or a rescue, you can get dogs that you will literally have the only dog that looks like that in the entire world. My little Lexi with her weird ridge on her back of her neck, it goes from the point of her head down to her shoulders, and it's a big ridge sticking up out of there. Apparently she doesn't have ridge back in it, which I don't believe. But there's not another dog who looks like her. And I've seen, there's this gorgeous dog that I was just working with. It's a Boston Terrier Boxer, we believe, black and white. It is one of the prettiest dogs I've ever seen in my life. It's a mutt. It might have been bred by, you know, somebody accidentally. It might have been bred by somebody for money. I don't know. But I've never seen a dog that looks like this. Just a gorgeous dog. And, you know, I think about it when you're a kid and your goldfish dies while you're at school. So your parents go and get a new goldfish and they put the goldfish in there so they don't tell you that the goldfish died. So you come home and you look at the goldfish and you go, there's a goldfish. Well, how about if you had a betta, like the betta fish that have all those beautiful colors? They're all different. Every single one of them is different from every single one. So what happens when your betta fish dies and you're at school and your parents go looking and they go, I don't remember, it was white. And you come home and you go, that's not my fish. Where's my fish? Well, that's what's so cool about dogs, even sometimes cats, you know, in the shelters. You get all different mixtures. My Lexi has at least 10 breeds that they could identify, and they're just all over the place, from Mexican hairless to a tiny bit of Chihuahua to Dalmatian. I mean, this dog is a little red, 20-pound, medium-haired. She looks like a Shiba Inu met a lab, met a Ridgeback, met a Puggle thing, and yeah. So you can get a dog that is just gorgeous and very different looking, and you'll be the only one who has it. Instead of you having, you know, when we look at these poodle mixes and you go, well, I know it's a poodle mix, but what's the other half? Really? A Bernese Mountain Dog? Oh, that looks just like the one that's the party color poodle mix. It doesn't matter because they're all a mix. But you can get the most awesome dogs in shelters and rescues. So find a shelter or rescue near you that you can volunteer, that you can foster, maybe bring your kids down, and spend a little time looking at it. And if you lose the dog, let's say you fall in love with one, and somebody says, oh, I'm sorry, that's just not going to be appropriate for your family. If it's the guy that, whoever we call them, Joe, if it's the person at the rescuer shelter who's really knowledgeable, and they tell you, you know, he's a great dog, but he's going to have a lot of energy, and, you know, he's going to knock your kids over. You know, listen to that person, because people usually in rescues and shelters, and I'm talking about not the founders, I'm talking about the workers, the people who are actually there, you know, busting their rear ends, driving the dogs, transporting the dogs, feeding the dogs, you know, trying to find a, you know, somebody who will train, or somebody like me who's a behaviorist who's going to help them. And I always help any 501, I will help for free, any rescue or shelter. I've done hundreds and hundreds through the years from all over the world. You know, but trust those people, because that person who is in charge and knows you and is meeting you is going to have your best interest at heart. So what do you do when you actually pick a dog? Well, I told you that earlier what to do, but now what do you do once the dog is in the house? Don't overfeed him. Don't tie food into love. Don't do the honey boo boo school of obedience training. Try to get the dog used to just your routine. You may drop a set of keys or bang on something, or you put your briefcase down too heavily, or your child knocks a lamp over and the dog goes flying away because he's afraid. You're going to learn about that dog, and it takes about 2 months for you to really learn the nuances of your dog, of people too, you know. So I call that the honeymoon period, and there's a honeymoon period of about 2 months, and it's almost like 2 months to the day. The dog will be super well-behaved. They won't beg at the table. They won't steal things. They won't chew. All the things, and you go, wow, this is the best dog in the world. Why would anybody have ever gotten rid of this best dog in the world? And then, because you're not treating the dog like a dog, but you're treating them like, oh, poor baby, you were abandoned. You were abused. Most dogs were not abused, okay? There definitely are some that were. But that is the biggest misconception, that rescue dogs are abused. Most dogs that end up, and again, I have, my little Lexi was severely abused. She smelled like gasoline and lighter fluid when my friend CJ found her. That was the first thing, where like, she smells like lighter fluid. They were going to try to barbecue her, put her on a barbecue. They were kicking her around a schoolyard. You want to talk about the delightful people in this world, the young people who are not the good ones. There's some really rotten people out there, but there's also some amazingly wonderful people. So, you know, let's say you have the dog now, and give the dog rules, get my book. I'm telling you, it's going to help you so much. SHHH Happens, Dog Behavior 101 by Janice Wolfe, and you can get it on Amazon. When you read that, just follow it like it's a recipe for a book. It goes into a lot of things, goes into selecting a dog. There's actually a whole chapter about choosing a dog, about the differences between purpose bred and rescue and shelter and all kinds of things like that. And there's also another super helpful area is going to be wyattslist.com, WYATTSLIST, wyattslist.com. And there's a free subscription. There's a paid subscription, but we do pet loss and bereavement counseling. If you lose a dog or you're, you know, you have issues that that you need help with, there's a 24-hour hotline as well. But those two are great resources because, you know, it's kind of scary when you Google and you see some, and it looks like a great website, and it's, you know, some, you know, person in Namibia or something who is, you know, just trying to steal your money. I just had that. I bought some Lysol that's, I mean, it wasn't that cheap. It was like $5-6 a thing. And I thought, oh, great, I found somebody who's not price gouging. And it turned out to be a scammer from somewhere. I think Australia, actually. It was AU. I don't know if it was Austria. I doubt it was Austria. But it was actually, there was a lot of Chinese characters on it. So I'm not 100% sure where that was. But that happened to be a scam Lysol, right? Well, they can scam you on knowledge, and you want to get somebody who knows what the heck they're doing, because dogs have teeth and dogs have personalities, and you want to have a safe animal for your children. So in the book, when you start reading, you're going to start seeing, yes, it talks all about how to choose a dog, how to select a dog, what kind of dog, thinking about different things that are important. If you don't have enough money to buy pet health insurance, you might not have enough money to have a dog. Pet health insurance, which I highly recommend, there's a couple of really good companies. I use Trupanion. They do not pay me. I wish they would, but they are excellent. Pet Partners is a really good one. I know Nationwide, a lot of people say is good. There's also some that really stink and that are a lot of money and have very, very poor benefits. I will not say who they are, but stick with probably those three. Do some research on your own. I just love it because I've had so many, my dogs are getting older. I've had them insured for years, and I have definitely had very good success with Trupanion on that. So, it can be, I have like $1,000 deductible because I can afford $1,000. If you want a lower deductible, it's going to be more expensive. If you have a dog and you're just looking at that in case the dog has like a major illness, then it's not that much money. And the smaller dogs and mixed breed dogs, mutts, not these doodle and mixed breed designer dogs things that people buy and have, but the mixed breed dogs like my Lexi is like half the price of what my other dogs are, because size also, so a smaller dog like under like 20 pounds is less expensive because everything's less expensive for insurance. The medication, instead of medication for a 100-pound Ridgeback, it's a 20-pound little dog. It's a fifth the cost. So the insurance is very reasonable. And you should be able to have good insurance. You should be able to afford a good quality food and boarding the dog, a little bit of training or behavioral work. And spending time. If you don't have time, it's not a good thing to buy a dog or to adopt a dog. That's where you might want to foster or maybe volunteer. So there's a lot of things we went through today, and every week we're going to go through step by step how you can be happy with dogs and the dogs can be happy with you. And thank you so much. God bless all of you. Have a wonderful 2021. May we be here the same time next year saying, hey, remember when we used to wear masks? Now we don't. But have a great night and God bless.